Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. It's probably 5 o'clock somewhere out in the middle of the Atlantic. It's Vox Pop on a Fine Food Friday, August 19th. It's happy hour here on the show. We will delve into the wonderful world of cocktails, distilling, and spirits. We have some connoisseurs of liquid intelligence in the studio. John Fisher, professor at the Culinary Institute of America, and he's like Santa Claus with booze. He comes in with a satchel full of goodies, and he's here. Also, Gabe Arenzo, he is the genius behind Gardner Liquid Mercantile. If you're curious about distilling or spirits, or you have a question about how to mix that perfect drink, maybe you want a rusty nail, oh, that's an easy one. Give us a call, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, Vox Pop Happy Hour after the news. Hello, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. You know, mixing a drink, it's not a simple process. It's not for the faint of heart. It involves an exact science, some patience, some art. It's a fascinating topic with a lot of history behind it, and we will delve into it right here on Food Friday. I couldn't be happier about this. John Fisher is here. He's a professor of hospitality and service management at the Culinary Institute of America in Hyde Park, New York. Previously, he was general manager at the Morel Wine Bar and Cafe in New York. He's got extensive industry experience, always a fun guest. Also joining us again, and both of these guys were here last summer, I think, Gabe Arenzo. He is the guy behind Gardner Liquid Mercantile in Gardner, New York. He earned the distinguished title of American Whiskey Ambassador of the Year from Whiskey Magazine in 2013. So if you have a question about distilling, mixing a drink, spirit, cider, other beverages, now is the time to call. 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You can also email the program, voxpop@wamc.org. I am manning the email here in the studio, and as you know, I only have limited success. But give it a shot if you wish, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. John and Gabe, welcome back to the show, gentlemen.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Ray.
Great to be back.
Boy, I'll tell you, John, you brought a lot of booze with you today.
Some of it doesn't have alcohol in it.
Really?
Seltzer.
Are you allowed to do that?
You have to.
You have to have mixers?
Teaching people how to drink better, not more.
You're a smart man, and you're wearing your Mets, your Tommy Agee jersey.
So it's all for you.
Therefore, you go right into the Vox Pop Food Friday Hall of Fame. So, Gabe, last time we were on, I think it was last summer, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
So you were just starting your own Gardner Liquid Mercantile. You had been with your family business, the Tuttle Hill Town Spirits Distillery, which is still around.
Correct, yeah.
You branched off, causing great family strife, no doubt.
Oh, no, Dad's very proud.
Is he?
Yeah, he is.
So how's it going over there?
It's going really well. We have a small distillery over at Dressel's Farm. I share a space with Kettleboro Cider House.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm taking the fruit from the farm there. It's over a 400-acre farm and distilling it. And then I've got a small Main Street bar, restaurant, and retail store where we're selling the products that we're making.
That's
and all the other
work.
Local stuff.
Do you sleep?
Not very well.
Actually,
these days,
you look pretty rested. It's pretty amazing. And Fisher, you look rested. You've been on vacation, eh?
Yep. Last week of vacation from culinary.
Oh, that's great. So you're back next week?
Back next week, and the beard comes off.
Is that a rule at
yeah.
the culinary?
Oh, yeah.
Just yes. because you're working around food?
I might wear a Mets jersey, but we have a dress code like the Yankees.
Well, there you go. Well, that's great. So you'll be back, and what courses will you be teaching?
Next semester, I'll be teaching beverage management with no tasting involved. The students are unpleasantly surprised on the first day of class. Also, food service management class, which is basically the nitty-gritty of how restaurants work. And I'll be teaching, for the first time, the art and science of brewing, which is the class in the brewery that we have on campus.
And that brewery is also fairly new as well, right?
Yeah, it opened last October. It's a 7-barrel system, so we can make about 200 gallons of beer per batch. Our partners are Brooklyn Brewery. They're the ones who donated basically the brew house. And we sell the beer just on campus, but we do sell it to the public.
And how is the beer?
The beer, well, what am I going to say? It really is tasty, though.
Yeah. And what are you brewing? What different types?
The two standard beers, one is a wit, a classic Belgian-style wit
yep.
with coriander and orange peel.
All right, let me ask you a question. Now,
sure.
Oftentimes you will see Americans, as we say, put a wedge of lemon in one of those beers. Will you recommend that or not recommend that? Let's get the expert opinion.
Technically, it's sacrilege
okay.
to do to a good beer.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have a middling beer,
yeah.
It will hide flaws.
Okay.
Also, it's one of the reasons that when people order the corporate wit beer, Blue Moon, their gig is an orange, a slice
yeah.
of orange, because there's orange peel in the Belgian-style wit beer.
Mm-hmm.
So no beer should need lemon. A piece of lemon, but it's just kind of like the way Americans put a lemon twist on espresso.
I remember years ago, there was a beer, Berliner Kindleweiss.
Berliner Weiss.
Okay. And it came with a big, round, I don't know what you'd call it, like a chalice.
Uh-huh.
And you would put the raspberry syrup in the glass. At least that's what they were telling us to do.
That's because the Berliner Weiss is a lightly sour beer.
Yeah.
Sour beers are hot this summer. Americans are finally discovering them, although beer geeks had discovered them the summer before. But
we
the
were
Berliner
drinking
Weiss,
this in the 80s.
Yeah. So Berliner Weiss, the real deal, is lightly sour. And so because of the German Reinheitsgebot, the German purity law,
yeah.
you're not allowed to put anything in the beer. So you can't make a spice beer. You can't make a flavored beer. It can
right.
only be hops, et cetera, hops, malt, and water. So to balance off the sourness, you would add the fruit syrup, either raspberry, or I think lingonberry is the other kind of berry, or woodruff, which is an herb. And
mm-hmm.
that's the green syrup that shows up in a Berliner Weiss.
Interesting.
But like down at Newburgh Brewing, they make a really great Berliner Weiss called Checkpoint Charlie that they offer syrups for. And I'll tell you what, maple syrup is delicious.
You're kidding me.
I
don't think I would try that. I think that would scare me.
Well, people who, since sour beer is hot, you mentioned the word sour beer, and a lot of people just make a kind of a sour face.
Yeah. Well, bitter beer is very popular. I mean, you have IPAs that are very bitter.
Yeah.
People dig that.
But even then, the bitter beers were something that were new for people, say, 5-8 years ago. Sour beers is another shock. You don't expect beer to be sour. The line that I like to use is that if you like – when people say, well, what's the sour beer like? I don't think I'm going to like it. Well, I'll say, look, if you like sparkling lemonade, you're going to like sour beer.
Oh, you make a point.
And because it is a shock. You take that first sip of sour beer, you're not expect with wine, you expect sour. With beer, you don't.
Interesting. Of course, we'll be not drinking beer today. We'll be...
After.
Oh, after we have some cocktails? All right. The topic is cocktails today and distilling and spirits. John Fisher is our guest. Also, Gabe Arenzo of Gardner Liquid Mercantile. Before we get to the phones at 800-348-2551, here's one that came in via email at voxpop@wamc.org. This is from John, who says, "My name is John." Well, perfect.
Hi, John.
Greenwich, New York. I just turned 21 recently and have to be gluten-free and sugar-free due to Lyme and have to stay this way for a year. I was wondering if you guys had any recommendations for drinks I'd be able to order at bars or pubs. Thanks if you get to my question. Well, John, you're in. So what do you think?
Well, I think I'll step in on this one, John. This is a big question in the distilling world. There's a lot of products that represent themselves as gluten-free.
Yeah.
Gluten-free vodkas, gluten-free gins. The fact is that gluten, the proteins that you're allergic to with a gluten allergy, do not make their way through the distillation process. So as long as you stick with a clear spirit, a distilled spirit with nothing else added to it, all vodkas, all whiskeys are going to be gluten-free.
Okay. Well, fair enough. So you're all set, John.
And if you want something with bubbles in it, you can drink cider.
That's right.
Oh, really?
Yeah, hard cider, no gluten.
And then this one came in.
There's sugar.
He can't have sugar. That's right. This one also came in via email, and then we'll get to the phones. This is from Fran. "I make my margaritas with a popular mix. My sister makes them with straight-up lime juice. Her margaritas are really tart, not really to my taste, but I like the fresh lime concept. Got a kick-butt margarita recipe with all fresh ingredients?" And that's from Fran.
1 ounce of fresh lime juice, 1 ounce of triple sec, 2 ounces of tequila. That's it.
Done.
So the fresh and that is it. Really, the best margarita depends on all three ingredients being high quality and fresh.
Hmm.
So the lime should have just been squozen, and that's a technical term.
Squozen.
Triple sec. Usually, the higher the proof of the triple sec, the higher the quality.
Mm-hmm.
So if you see two bottles of triple sec, one's 20 proof and
yeah.
one's 40 proof.
Go for the 40.
Get the higher proof. And then any good silver tequila. I prefer silver tequila for margaritas because it has the brightness and the white pepper character that I think marries really well with lime juice.
Interesting about lime juice.
So you don't have to spend, you don't have to get like Reposado or Añejo, the expensive tequilas. And there's also controversy on the lime juice because the Times did a story a while ago where they tested older lime juice, an hour old, 2 hours old, a day old.
Yeah.
Blind tasting, some people chose the oxidized lime juice because lime juice starts oxidizing 20 minutes.
You're kidding
after
me.
You've squeezed it.
So the blind taste test said oxidized is better.
Yeah, I still am a little wary of how they what their testing was like.
Was that take the edge off the acidity?
I think it just it would make it a little bit less sharp, but yeah. I think that sharpness is part of what adds to the balance of a cocktail.
All right, let me ask you a sacrilege question. When we go up on vacation, often, and I rarely drink anything with rum, we will try to get mojitos. Mm-hmm. And what we'll do is, wife and I will take a thermos onto the beach with a mix, and I'll buy a mix, and they're usually dreadful. And is there one that you would, for those who are roughing it and not making fresh, but a good lime, limey mojito mix that you could use?
I can't think of a single packaged mix that does anywhere near justice.
Thank you.
To the cocktail.
The one I found that we liked was Roses. It was liquid.
Yeah.
And it was not as sweet as some of the other ones.
Well, Roses is a great company.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a simple cocktail, too, the mojito. I mean, it's mint, sugar, lime, or no lime?
Yeah, lime.
Lime
yeah. juice,
so, I mean,
simple syrup.
Yeah, I mean, it's something you can make very easily. Simple syrup is just one-to-one water to sugar.
There it is.
I made this simple syrup in this bottle, filling it halfway with sugar, filling it the rest of the way with water. I did not heat it.
Really?
I didn't boil it. I just put it in here, and I shook the bejesus out of it. And this is simple syrup.
That's also a technical term?
Yes.
Okay.
And I giggled uncontrollably when I was in the grocery store and saw a bottle of simple syrup.
For $6.
Yes. It was seven. Well, it was Poughkeepsie, so it was $7.
Yeah, I saw that myself. Hey, we'll take a break, and then we'll get to the phones. Dexter, Matthew, Steve, everybody else on the line. We'll get to that. And then, we'll have a drink. It's a Vox Pop. It's Food Friday. It's 5 o'clock somewhere. We'll be back.
Support for WAMC comes from Spirit House Amherst, Massachusetts, a family-owned wine, beer, and spirits retailer offering organically farmed wines from around the world. Wine tastings Saturday afternoons, spirithaus.com. Gazebo, Northampton, Massachusetts, an independent lingerie shop specializing in bra and post-mastectomy fittings, providing support to the Pioneer Valley for almost 40 years. the-gazebo.com. Uncle Sam's All-American Chocolate Factory, offering over 100 chocolates, including truffles, buttercrunch, and sea-salted caramels, located on Albany Street, Schenectady, and Newton Plaza, Loudonville, UncleSamsCandy.com. River Valley Co-op, Northampton, Massachusetts, a food co-op featuring fresh local foods, a deli department with made-to-order sandwiches, a soup and salad bar, and a bakery, rivervalley.coop. And Blue Heron Restaurant and Catering, located in the Old Town Hall, Sunderland, Massachusetts, open Tuesday through Sunday at 5, featuring outdoor dining on the patio and front porch throughout the summer. BlueHeronDining.com.
It's Vox Pop. It is Food Friday. Ray Graff here, joined today by John Fisher and Gabe Arenzo. And, it's drinky-drinky time here on the Food Friday. Look who walked in. Ian Pickus. Nice to have you here.
Hey, guys. Going to have to turn the mic on.
There you go. You're on.
Don't hold my next newscast against me, all right?
No. You're only going to have a little taste. That's how we do this on the show. Just a little bit of a taste. What are we drinking first, John?
Well, the first thing we're going to do is we're going to taste what is one of the hottest spirits in the biz today, which is mezcal.
Oh, yeah.
And mezcal is from Mexico. It is not tequila. There's no mezcalin in it. Nothing crazy happens when you eat the worm other than the fact that you ate a worm.
Okay, now the rumor was you eat the worm and you have some psychedelic issues.
There was also a rumor that you drank 7-Up. It was a contraceptive during the 50s.
And look at all the kids from the 60s.
Amazing. But mezcal is production is centered around Oaxaca. The biggest differences between mezcal and tequila is that mezcal is made from a range of different agave plants.
Okay.
There are hundreds of varieties. And agave is not a cactus. It's a It's more closely related to lilies and amaryllis.
Huh.
It's actually its own class, its own family called Agaveaceae. But the agaves, I was talking to a mezcal maker and said, "What's the deal with the different agaves?" And he said, "Well, if you were a winemaker and someone came up to you and said you can only have Chardonnay for the rest of your life, that's tequila because they're only allowed to use 100% blue Weber agave." And that's led to actually agricultural problems because the fastest way to propagate agave is by cloning. And so you have these genetic copies of agave all over Mexico. And if one disease hits,
they all go.
And a lot of them are being wiped out. So anyway, mezcal is they use different types of agave. And when they are taking these agave heads that can be up to 200 pounds and take 7 to 12 years to mature.
Mm-hmm.
You have to bake it to turn some of the starches into sugars. Now, in tequila, they do it in big ovens. That's if it's being done the right way.
Okay.
In mezcal, they actually dig a pit, light a fire, put the agave heads in there, build another fire on top, cover it over, and let it cook for 2 or 3 days. So mezcal gets a smokiness to it from this process. And some people, I think it's a little ham-handed to call it this. Some people call it the Scotch of Mexico because it's smokier. But it's a much different kind of smoke quality than Scotch has.
So let me get this straight. Commercial concerns are still digging pits and starting fires.
Well, that's defined commercial. Because this mezcal that I brought is from a company called Del Maguey.
Okay.
And this is a they make single village agaves, single village mezcals. This crazy guy named Ron Cooper, an artist and distiller. And you have to wait, though, Ray.
Oh, I'm just sniffing it. Because getting the nose.
We have our copitas here, these clay little cups.
Okay.
And what you're supposed to do is to honor, and I know it sounds a little tree-huggy, but to honor Mother Earth and the life force that runs through all of us, what you say when you're going to drink mezcal right before it is you say Stijibeyu, which is a Native American word from the area.
Okay.
So you say Stijibeyu.
Stijibeyu. Oh, delicious. What do you think, Ian Pickus?
Delicious.
Very nice.
You can definitely get that second smoke. The first taste is on the front of the tongue, and then afterwards, there's a smokiness.
Good, like, and good for you.
It's really cool to see how they grind up the agave, too, before they put it into the pit. A lot of the small producers actually still have the stone connected to the donkey who walks around the pit, and they just shovel the agave underneath the stone.
Huh.
With a big rolling stone. Vertically, the stone is vertical, and it rolls around and crushes the agave.
This is amazing. Okay, well, we're off to a flying start here. And
literally.
2:25. We'll get to our first call. I hope Dexter on I-90 is still with us. He's been waiting a long time. Dexter, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm not on I-90 anymore, but thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
John and Gabe, you know, your host introduced this show by saying that what you do is not for the faint of heart. You know, I would have thought it's a perfect pastime for the faint of heart. I guess I'm looking for your best example of what is not for the faint of heart.
I was only kidding around, but
that would explode or catch fire, but like, what is the most challenging drink you could come up with?
There are challenging drinks. We were talking about this before the show, and I said, you know, somebody asked me to make a boxcar, and he said it took egg whites. I've never even heard of putting egg whites in a drink.
Egg whites are classic, going back pre-prohibition as an ingredient to add foam, but also body to a cocktail. And of course, now it's illegal to use unpasteurized egg whites in a lot of states, but if you're making the cocktail right, you use unpasteurized egg whites.
So what's the toughest drink to mix?
I would say probably a pousse café because of the layering.
I don't even know what that is, but
it sounds dirty, whatever it is.
It's actually a category of drink. It's layered cocktails, and so the classic pousse café has 7 different ingredients in it, and it's more that it's mind-numbingly boring, and you have to be really careful pouring the liquors down the side of the glass or over a spoon.
And what, okay, now how do you do that? How do you layer a drink?
Well,
we've had this discussion at home, believe
it or not. You break the surface tension with some sort of item. Usually the bartender will use the back of a bar spoon. Back in the day of making shots in the 80s, I used to make B-52s as a bartender.
Yeah.
And that's Kahlua, Bailey's, and Grand Marnier.
Yuck.
And you would pour – I know. It would lead to diabetic shock before drunkenness. But it's you would make it by pouring the liqueurs over a cherry and into the shot glass.
Mm.
And then the bartender traditionally ate the cherry. It was just stupid.
And said Subway and
yeah.
things like that. All right, let's go over to Matthew in Rensselaer County. Matthew, you're on.
Hi. I'm now at my doctor's office, so I'm hoping that I'll be able to hear this streamed later on a podcast.
Sure, man. Yeah, absolutely.
Here's the deal. I've always been a craft beer guy since the early 80s, and last 10 years or so gotten heavily into cocktails and crafting of cocktails. And I'm interested in a couple of topics that are related, and I'll let you guys discuss it. Tinctures, bitters. Is bitters a type of tincture? And if I'm experimenting with bitters, I got a couple of sample packs from Cooperstown Distillery of various types. How is the best way to experiment with what the flavors provide, given that they're so concentrated in and of themselves? Would you put it in unflavored seltzer and do a few drops at a time until you get a sense of what they're all about? And for tinctures, I grow a lot of herbs in my herb garden. If I want to make tinctures, how do I go about the process of developing that? And I'll let you guys discuss. Thanks.
Okay, thank you.
I would say that bitters are a tincture, but not all tinctures are bitters. Bitters has got to be bitter in order to be a bitter. And I think that, yeah, there's a great way to taste your bitters and get a feel for them by putting them into club soda or tasting them on your hand or tasting them on a spoon, but also with your favorite cocktail, a simple cocktail like a whiskey, like an old fashioned.
Oh, I love an old fashioned.
You know, and try your different bitters. Try a couple dashes and, you know, go through one or two, maybe three an evening, and you should be able to get your sample pack done in a few nights.
Several years ago, there was a bitter shortage, was there not?
Well, yeah, Angostura, actually, for a while, they couldn't get enough of their bottles. Their bottled supplier in China, I think that was the story, that they ran out, and they had bitters.
Oh, they did?
They just didn't have any bottles to put them in.
Now, let me ask you a question. When this whole thing went down, I bought a few bottles of bitter, and they're in my side door of my fridge. How long do they keep?
Forever.
Do they? Oh, good. Oh, thank God.
Well, some are alcohol-based. Most are alcohol-based. Also, some are syrup-based. But
yeah.
The alcohol-based ones will last forever.
Yeah, yeah, Angostura bitters are 90 proof, for God's sake.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, 45% alcohol. Because they're not considered potable, that's why you can buy them at a grocery store.
Oh, very interesting.
But they will change over time, especially if that bottle's open. They will change, and not necessarily for the worse.
But for the bitter.
For the bitter.
You see that? I did there. Let's go to Steve in Pownall, Vermont. Steve, you're on.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
I'd like to know if I can learn how to make a gin Tom Collins.
Without the mixer, without the help.
I'm sorry. What?
Tom Collins.
Tom Collins? Oh, that's just gin, lemon juice, simple syrup, and soda. Club soda, or seltzer. And it's a built cocktail, so all you have to do, I'm making a built cocktail now. You don't have to shake it. You just pour the ingredients in, give it one big stir, and enjoy.
Okay.
Sorry. Tom Collins.
You got that, Steve? Okay, well, I think he's got it. What are you making now, John?
This is a cocktail called a Pale Rider.
Okay.
It's a great summer cocktail. It's from Phil Ward, who's the proprietor of Maya Well Restaurant and Bar in New York City. And they specialize in tequila and mezcal, conveniently enough, having just talked about mezcal. And this is a cocktail that he hates sangria, but he wanted to have something that kind of mimicked sangria in flavor and style.
Why does he hate sangria?
He thinks it's just cheesy.
Okay.
You just drank it in high school to get drunk.
Oh,
you know?
Fair enough.
Or one did. I'm not accusing
but
you.
But yeah, don't accuse me of that.
And so he wanted to do something that included some of his favorite ingredients. And this is a combination of manzanilla sherry. And sherry cocktails are hot, and Gable attests to this. They're pretty hot in the industry. Sherry is a kind of a forgotten wine. It's an oxidized and fortified wine from the south of Spain. The two of my favorite sherries are Fino and Manzanilla, or as they pronounce it, Manzanilla.
Manzanilla.
Because you
sure.
lisp for the Z's and C's. So this is Manzanilla, and this is actually from a winery that I got to visit. And it's dry And because I'll give it to you separately from the cocktail in a bit. But it's dry and it's crisp and it goes with a lot of different food. And it's a great, it's almost, because Manzanilla is from near the ocean, it almost has a briny saltiness to it as well. And it's just great over ice. It's great as just, you know, sitting by the pool. It is a little weird at first because it does have that slightly oxidized and aged flavor. But this wine, you can see looking in the glass, it looks like Pinot Grigio or
yeah,
Sauvignon
it sure
Blanc.
Does.
It should be this light in color.
And it should be, I see you have refrigerated it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I did it just because so the ice wouldn't melt as much also. But and I also checked the date on here to see when this was made. And this is the youngest one I could find. It's just about a little less than a year old.
So freshness, you want them young.
You want fresh, you want young. It should look like Pinot Grigio or white wine. If it's brown, take it back to the wine store.
Very interesting indeed.
And it's crisp and tasty. And so I'm going to make the rest of the cocktail with this.
Okay, what else is in this?
So it's the sherry. It's an ounce of jalapeno-infused tequila.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Infused with jalapenos from my garden.
No way. Really?
A quarter ounce of lime juice, fresh lime juice. 3/4 of an ounce of simple syrup.
Oh, boy.
And a little splash of seltzer.
What did I do to deserve this?
Oh, you have to talk for a second.
Okay, this is an email that came in. One says, if you don't want to get drunk on the air, although it would probably be very interesting to listen to, just swish the drink around in your mouth and expectorate into a cup. Well, thank you, Matt. Don't worry, I'm only having tiny little tastes. I'll be okay. This one is from Marcel, who says, hi, I'm a fan of dry martinis, usually mixing 3 parts gin to 1/3 or 1/2 part dry vermouth, or 1 vodka, 2 gin, and 1/2 dry vermouth, both with 2 or 3 very good stuffed olives. I think I heard on the last show that the original martini was made with sweet vermouth. I'm now very fond of what I call a summer martini, 3 parts gin to 1 part sweet vermouth, served with a twist of lemon. They are light, slightly sweet, and have a slight orange taste, perfect for a hot summer afternoon. Thoughts or suggestions appreciated. That is from Marcel in Chicopee.
All of those sound delicious. I would suggest maybe playing around with the types of vermouth that you're using. I think that the vermouth is going to have a bigger effect than the vodka will or the gin. I mean, there are vastly different
so
types
many
of gins.
Yeah.
But the vermouth, if you go with a really cheap vermouth versus a mid-range versus a really high quality, you're going to see a vast difference. So I would play around with something like a Dolan. Dolan is a really great mid-range
price. Very good brand.
What's a high-end that you would recommend?
Really isn't an expensive one, except for maybe some American wine.
For dry, right. Yeah. For dry, well, there's a... I mean, Cokie Americano is not a vermouth. What is it, a vermouth?
No, it's... I guess it's technically a aperitif wine. It's like Lillet, which is a fortified, slightly sweetened wine that's got... Lillet is fortified with orange and lemon brandies. It's actually made in Bordeaux. And Cokie is a little bit hotter on the market. It's very
delicious.
Similar, though. Slightly sweet, a little bit stronger than a vermouth. But aromatized wines.
Yeah.
And Lillet has a dry as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so this is the...
The Pale Rider.
The Pale Rider. Let's give it a shot. I'm the only one having one. All right.
Well, we're going to bring it back over here. You're not going to finish it.
I
wanted to put it in a nice glass for you.
Oh, that is nice.
I love
that
cocktail.
One more sip before I hand it on.
And I like the jalapeno as much for the flavor as for the heat. And you can just get a tiny bit of heat, just prickles your tongue.
Yeah.
And to have a cold drink that also is a little hot is kind of fun as well.
I like the sherry in that.
Yeah.
How long did you leave the jalapenos in the tequila?
Well, these jalapeno, oh, and the cucumbers from my garden too.
You can taste that.
Yeah, I know. You can taste the love. the jalapenos were right out of the garden, and they infused more quickly than I expected. With store-bought, like grocery store jalapenos, it takes as much as a day. With these, it was only about 3 hours.
And do you find that there's too long that you can leave certain types of either herbs or botanicals or peppers?
Yes.
And what's that time for you?
You know, depending, that's why you should taste it while it's infusing. I learned not to use soft fruits like strawberries, although you're going to be using them in distillation. Yeah. But I learned not to leave them in a tequila or vodka for a long time because they start looking like rotting human flesh.
Yeah, they're not pretty after a few days.
All right, this question came in via email from Rogerio. In the spirit of the Olympic Games, cachaça or vodka?
Oh, cachaça all the way.
What is that? I don't even know.
Definitely
what that
cachaça.
Is.
Cachaça is a cane spirit made in Brazil. Yeah. There are a number of great brands out there right now.
Rum?
Yeah, well,
it's could almost call it a rum, but they actually passed legislation in Brazil declaring it that it is not a rum.
If you made it outside of Brazil, it would be considered a rum.
Okay.
There's a great brand, Avoa, that does a variety of different types of woods. So if you're looking for a nice, foray into cachaças, I would try like the Plata, which is a white, and then move on to some of the aged ones, which are fantastic.
This one came in from Adrian in New Paltz. I've been having fun with 100% fruit juices into ice cube trays, used frozen to enhance beers like lemonade for the shandy flavor. Palm cherry in Jenny Cream Ale is a personal favorite. Well, good luck with that one. Raw chunks of appropriate fruit placed within each cube, a real dressed up as well. Please comment on cubes like these used in cocktails. I have a couple bartenders who think it's a biz model, like orange juice with orange slice cubes used in a screwdriver.
There's a arguably one of the most important bars in the country right now called the Aviary in Chicago.
Yeah. Why would a bar be important?
Well, because they use modernist cuisine techniques. They use foams and you make balloons out of sugar and then fill them with helium and carry them into the dining room.
Molecular coctology.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah.
So they make up to 35 kinds of ice at a time for their cocktails, and a lot of them are flavored. So when you make a cocktail with ice that adds flavor to the cocktail rather than subtracting with dilution, it's a good idea.
John Fisher is our guest, also joined today by Gabe Arenzo. It is a cocktail show here on Vox Pop Food Friday, and I promise we'll get back to the phones in a moment. It's 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Stamble String Instruments, downtown Amherst and Poughkeepsie, providing sales, service, and rentals of violins, violas, cellos, and bows, restorations and appraisals, open Tuesday through Saturday, stamblestring.com. Big Y, family-owned and operated with Big Y Express stations in Lee and Pittsfield, celebrating 80 years of serving communities throughout New England, bigy.com. The Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, presenting Circus Circus, featuring the Beech Nut Miniature Circus alongside circus paintings of Everett Shin, Norman Rockwell, and more, arkellmuseum.org. Kent Hicks Construction, specializing in deep energy retrofits, passive house, zero energy homes, and historic restorations, serving Western Massachusetts for over 25 years. KentHicksConstruction.com. And Cafe Capriccio, Chef Jim Rua, working to preserve and maintain the traditions of Italian cuisine and hospitality since 1982 on Grand Street in Albany, New York. CafeCapriccio.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC Food Friday. Ray Graff here today. It's cocktails with John Fisher and Gabe Arenzo. Gabe is the guy behind Gardner Liquid Mercantile. What are you currently brewing up over there at the Mercantile?
So I have a 50-gallon still that I got out up in New Hampshire. It's either open flame or also electric. And I'm basically, the idea is to take what's left over, what's available on the farm, what's overripe, and turn that into a distillate. So right now I've got some strawberries that I've distilled. I've been playing around with cherries. On the bar at the Mercantile right now, we've got our apple eau de vie, which is an unaged brandy.
So what, like moonshine brandy?
Well, I pay my taxes, so it's not moonshine.
Okay.
But it's clear, so it doesn't spend any time in the barrel. I've actually put some of that eau de vie into barrels, which will come out as apple brandy.
So we'll have to try that.
We'll have to
you
try
brought
it.
That. Okay,
I
beautiful.
Some,
All right, let's take a phone call here, and let's go to Mark in Salem, New York. Mark, you're on.
Hi. I'm a big fan of Campari with a little bit of Campari with quite a bit of San Pellegrino water in it as a summer drink. And I used to, when I went to Italy, we had Negronis. And
my favorite cocktail.
Made with,
My favorite cocktail.
Well, all right. Well, can you give me, they use club soda, I think. Can you give me the proportions of gin and vermouth and what the mix would be?
Actually, Negroni is the one of the, it's a bartender's favorite cocktail because it's impossible to screw up.
Unless you put seltzer in it.
And there's, putting seltzer in is one way to screw it up. Because all it is 1 ounce of gin, 1 ounce of Campari, and 1 ounce of sweet vermouth. And
okay,
the variations would be different gins, different vermouths. Always Campari, though.
Would San Pellegrino water be all right in that, or would that screw it up too?
No, then it wouldn't be a Negroni. Then it would be a, then it would be a Negroni soda.
Okay.
And could be delicious.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah, it could be tasty, but it's not a Negroni.
Okay, because that's the way I have my Campari usually with San Pellegrino or something like that.
That's a valid way to drink Campari is with soda, and if you really like bitterness, with tonic. Or with grapefruit juice, if you like bitterness. But if you can listen to the rest of the show, the next cocktail I'm making uses Aperol, which is a lower alcohol version, basically, of Campari. And it's one of the most
popular. Well, we had two on an empty stomach in Italy while we were waiting for the restaurant to open. And I'm glad I wasn't driving.
Oh, there you go. You need to hang around me and Gabe more.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, Mark, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Now, I love Campari, and I will drink it straight up. Is that wrong?
That's an impressive ability to handle bitterness.
Why?
Because
I've been in radio for like 30 years. I know bitterness pretty well.
I was going to leave the rest of the joke to you, yes.
But no, Campari's, are there any other drinks that are commonly accepted besides the Negroni that use Campari?
Oh, you use Campari? Oh, sure. I mean, an Americano, as I said, use it as a mixer, using grapefruit juice as a mixer or tonic water. Anytime you want to add a little sweetness and bitterness to a cocktail and you want to make it bright red,
it's fabulous stuff. I mean, I think it's a real acquired taste, but once you acquire it, it is something.
And if you switch out the gin for a whiskey, you end
Bombardier.
Up with a Boulevardier.
I mean, Boulevardier.
Oh, really? And what whiskey, like a rye?
Bourbon, rye, you could use any type that you like. I like mine with rye.
I would stay away from scotch, but any of the other non-smoky whiskeys. For a Boulevard, and it's fun to say Boulevardier. Yeah?
Yes, well, we don't say that much around my house. Teresa in Troy is on. Teresa.
Hi, I have a question. Why is it that when I order a bourbon neat, the bartender looks at me like, what do you mean?
Oh, boy.
Is it regional to ask for a drink neat, or is it old?
No, you need new bartenders.
Yeah.
The thing, though, what I will say about ordering a whiskey neat, and Gabe will agree, is that most whiskeys need a little bit of water. Just sometimes.
Not for me.
You'd be surprised. It opens up the whiskey. It allows more of the aromatics to come out because once you add a little bit of water,
even a drop.
And there are at a good whiskey bar, they will have water droppers, and you can just take the couple of drops. That's all you need, and that helps to really open.
Where do
it
I
up.
Find a good whiskey bar?
Yeah. Well, there are enough. First of all, your house can be a great whiskey bar.
That's true.
What the water does is it loosens up the bonds between the aromatic molecules and the alcohol, because most aromatic molecules are oil-based and therefore hold on to the alcohol. Water helps loosen it up so you'll get more flavor by just adding a little bit of water. That's why a martini made with just like a gin bottle out of the freezer and a vermouth bottle out of the refrigerator tastes horrible.
The condensation.
You need the water from the ice.
Mm.
You need the water from the ice.
And but don't shake it. John has informed me many years ago not to shake it.
No, you're
unless
allowed.
James Bond.
I will do it.
I was an altar boy. I'm allowed to bless you with this one. You can shake.
Well, thank you very much, Teresa.
I'm jealous of you, Ray.
Bye now. See ya. You know, even with a good single malt, a drop of water, it's not sacrilege, right?
Yeah. You wouldn't open up
wouldn't
open up a fine bottle of wine, pop the top, pour it in a glass and drink it, right? You would let it breathe. You would let it oxidize. You would let it, you know, it's the same thing with whiskey. I like to say that water is to whiskey what oxygen is to wine.
Here's a question that came in via email about single malt. Your thoughts on single malt scotch. For me, I prefer Islay. Highland does not do it for me. See, I'm the other way around. For me, it's all about the smoky bass notes. No Highland treble. And that's from Alan.
That's a good line.
Bass and treble.
Yeah, the Isla is actually my favorite too because it's got the most action. You know, it's the funkiest. There's one that I absolutely adore called Leg of Yulin. That's a 16-year-old.
The 16 is amazing. Yeah.
And it's just it's like an iron fist in a velvet glove. It's got all those crazy aromatics, but it's got the smoothness of being a 16-year-old. Interesting thing happening with single malts, though, is that because of the demand, they're starting to drop their age statements and make blends that are like a style more than they're going on style base rather than age.
Now, the demand is an interesting thing because 25 years ago, you get an 18-year-old bottle of Macallan, wasn't that much. Now it's out of sight.
You know what it is wholesale now?
No.
$180.
Wow.
Wow.
Wow. And so...
For the 18, not the 20 or 25.
That's crazy.
Everybody's drinking whiskey now, and the single malts, people are really into the single malts because they're so unique. The blends, you can find a really amazing blend, and I have blends at home that I like to drink, but in the same way that we're drinking this mezcal, and these are single village mezcals, you get something very unique from each village, each distillery. Same thing with scotch, and the Islay's tend to be peaty. Are there any non-peaty Islay's?
If they are, they would be an aberration.
Wouldn't really make sense.
Yeah, it would be like a non-smoky ham.
All right, this one came in, and I guess it's almost time for another drink. This one came in from Robin, who is outreach coordinator at Blue Rider Stables. And she says, I work for a nonprofit organization. We're planning a benefit where we will be serving a signature cocktail. Can you recommend a blue cocktail that will not stain our guests' teeth? We have a donation of vodka, so we'd like to incorporate that as well. Well, you see, this is the sort of public service we can do on this program.
I don't know if blue curacao stains your teeth unless they're the, like, really cheap dentures.
And I think that is that the only option, really, blue curacao. I guess you could do an infusion and maybe use some food coloring.
Oh, yeah. That would be great. Drops. That might do it, too. That might stain
it
the
might
teeth.
Taste better. Than...
You know what I would do? I would serve regular cocktails in blue glasses.
There you go.
I'll get like some cobalt blue glass.
Back in college days, we used to drink blue whales.
Of course you did.
This was, early 80s. Was not a good memory. What are you making now? Good Lord, you open a bottle of champagne?
Yeah, this is actually sparkling wine, because sparkling wine from Champagne is champagne. Sparkling wine from elsewhere is sparkling wine.
Fine.
And this cocktail actually usually uses Prosecco, but I don't want to get on my Prosecco soapbox, because Prosecco has gotten so expensive because of its demand that people are charging as much for Prosecco as they charge for full champagne method sparkling wines, which is what this one is.
And why shouldn't they?
Because Prosecco is made in a giant tank. It's called the Charmat process, and it's a lower cost process, so the product should be lower cost on the shelf. And if you go to Italy, you can get a bottle of Prosecco for like €3 at a grocery store. Mm-hmm. And that's what it should be. And they serve it in Italy, they serve it in like juice glasses. And you drink it with your sandwich at lunch. It is not fancy. It's not in a tulip glass.
Yeah.
And it's turned into this thing in the United States.
Oh, that's very interesting.
And
marketing.
And forced carbonation, or Prosecco is always forced carbonation?
It is still made on its lees. It is still carbonation from the yeast, but it's in a big tank. And then they filter the whole tank under pressure, and they bottle it. And the bubbles are bigger because it's made in a big tank instead of in a smaller container. Because real champagne and champagne method, or traditional method wines like this one here, which is, believe it or not, from New Mexico. This got its bubbles in this bottle. With yeast in this bottle, and they went through the champagne process, and they eventually turned the bottle upside down, and the yeast went into the neck, and they freeze it, and they pop the bottle off, and a plug of yeast shoots out the end, and they cover the top, and they put a little more back in, put the cork in the cage, and it sits in. It was made in this bottle.
So this is the champagne method, but it cannot be called champagne
because it's not from champagne.
Okay,
and that's European law.
The number is 800-348-2551. While you're mixing that one up, John Fisher, let's go back to the phones. And Tracy in Glenmont has a question close to my heart. Go ahead, Tracy.
Hi, I like to drink a Manhattan made with bourbon, and I wondered if you could give me your best recipes for a perfect Manhattan.
Well, be careful the way you use the word perfect.
Aha.
No, I mean
a perfect martini is something else.
I mean a perfect Manhattan.
Okay,
there's only one way to make that then.
Yeah, there's one way. Right. That's 2 ounces
of whiskey. But what are the bourbon?
Okay, we lost you there, but we'll give you the ratios here.
So it's two parts whiskey, bourbon or rye. I like it with rye.
Me too.
And half part sweet vermouth, half part dry vermouth.
That's it.
Dash of bitters if you want. Dash of bitters.
And it's really good.
And garnish with a lemon twist.
So you go with bourbon, Tracy. I like a nice rye. I like a nice rye with my Canadian Club.
Try a rye. Maybe I'll give that a try.
It was the cocktail was originated with rye in the late 1800s. And because rye has a slight spiciness, I think it stands up in the cocktail and shows its identity a little better. Bourbon I like in a lot of cocktails, but I think because of its kind of round sweetness.
Like an old-fashioned. Can't go wrong.
Yeah, its voice isn't as sharp as that of rye.
I think that rye mixes really well in that way. Yeah.
Rocks or straight up, whichever is your preference. Just remember with straight up, it is going to warm up, and you have to drink it a little bit faster. And on the rocks, you can sit around and let it get diluted. It depends on your situation more than anything, even maybe more than taste.
And you would want to, I love to take a little slice of orange zest and just squeeze that orange zest over the cocktail, and you get the oils. You can see them squirt out.
Ooh,
and just let that cover the top, and then when you bring it up, it involves in every single sip that you take.
Tracy, thank you.
That sounds great.
Appreciate
thank you.
The call. Bye. Bye-bye. Now. Have a good weekend. This is the best mixed drink I've ever had. What is this?
This is an Aperol Spritz.
This is amazing.
It is huge in Europe, in Italy. I was in Italy the last time about 5 years ago, 4 years ago, and it was the biggest cocktail. It was everywhere, northern, southern. And it's a combination of Aperol, aperitivo, which is like a lower alcohol. I mean, Campari is low alcohol to begin with. It's only 26% alcohol. It's 52 proof. Aperol is only 11%. No, wait, 17%.
Okay.
Wait, I think I said that was right the first time.
Get your glasses on. Okay, there
11.
You go.
And it's a combination of Aperol. In Italy, they make it with Prosecco. I already said my feelings about Prosecco.
Right.
A splash of soda and a piece of orange. And so this is a super – and a splash of soda.
And what are the ratios?
It should be 4 to 5 ounces of sparkling wine, 2.5 ounces of Aperol, 1 ounce of seltzer.
I love that drink.
It's a great summer cocktail, great daytime cocktail.
You can drink 20 of them and barely, feel it.
Right, low alcohol.
Now, folks, for those listening at home, the legal department suggests that you don't drink 20 of them, just saying.
Over the course of a week.
Oh, good point, and good save. By the way, Gabe, I love the apple brandy.
Oh, well, thank you very
really
much.
It's really tasty stuff. So this is what it's new? What do they call it? It's not aged?
This is eau de vie. So eau de vie is brandy before the barrel. It's a spirit made from fruit. So in the same vein as corn whiskey or white lightning that you might see, which is whiskey before the barrel.
Right.
Eau de vie is brandy before
the barrel.
And
I'm not a big fan of that.
No?
This, you get a little essence of the apples. It's very nice.
And that's the idea for the distiller, is to really coax out the flavor of the fruit that you're starting from, let some of that remain in there, and keeping out the negative qualities, the oils and the negative alcohols.
And it's probably higher in alcohol than you think because it's well made. Not just being nice to Gabe, but he's a very good distiller and was the first distiller at his family's place, Tuthill Town.
It's very smooth.
It's higher alcohol than you think.
Well, yeah. I'm looking right at it. It's 84 proof, right? Yeah, that's good stuff. Let's go back to the phones. Rory in Hudson. Rory, you're on.
Hi. I've noticed that a lot of the New York bourbons and whiskeys are aged for a shorter period of time than a lot of the southern stuff and stuff from Scotland and Ireland.
Is that an
economic
decision? I'm
wondering why that is. Okay, is that what it is?
Well, no, I mean,
does that have any advantages?
So the main advantage, and I don't think that it's just New York, I think that it's craft distilleries around the country, small distilleries that are starting up and trying to make whiskey.
And make money.
You can start a small distillery. It costs a lot of money to start a small distillery. A lot of people will sell vodka or unaged spirits to bridge the gap before they can sell
gin.
Their whiskey.
Gin is huge.
Gin, of course, any unaged spirits. And you can also use smaller barrels, and the smaller barrels give you more surface area contact with the wood, and that expedites a number of the maturation processes. Not all of them.
Oh.
You can't make
and that
the same
cocktails, right?
What's that?
That'll change the kind of cocktail that you're going to make too, a little bit to some degree, I believe, right?
More the
I'm just curious about.
It'll change more what the cocktail is going to what his final flavor will be rather than the type of cocktail you would be making.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, right, we still make all the classic whiskey cocktails at Gardner Liquid Mercantile with local whiskeys, which are relatively young.
Rye is pretty popular nowadays, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's hot. Rye. Why?
Well, I mean, what does anything really get hot? But rye is a really feisty, delicious, spicy whiskey. And it was, in the Northeast, it was probably the whiskey that people were drinking pre-Prohibition. If you had a whiskey or you had a cocktail in the city and it was made with whiskey, it would be whiskey that was made from rye grain. And that was because of a lot of the Scotch Irish that came over, and also because rye is a great cover crop here in the Northeast.
Well, do you keep any barrels aside and say this will be a very aged addition some years down the road?
Yeah, there are a few really old. I mean, when I say really old at Tuttletown for Hudson Whiskey, I mean from 2006, 2007.
Okay.
That's really old for Tuttletown. But now, as Tuttletown and Hudson Whiskey's gotten older, it's sort of migrated to larger barrels. So it's really expensive to use those small barrels.
Well, Gabe Arenzo, we are out of time.
Okay.
And what's the website?
GardnerLiquidMercantile.com or just LiquidMercantile.com. We'll take you to the same place.
Well, thank you very much for being here. John Fisher, genius with the mixed drinks, as always.
My pleasure,
Your
as always.
Sartorial choices are excellent. The Mets, Tommy Agee jersey.
It's not easy.
No,
it's not
man.
Easy being a Mets fan.
No, not today. It's not. Anyway, we thank you guys for being here. Thanks to everybody who called in. Support comes from the Nature Conservancy's Adirondack chapter, working to protect ecologically important lands and waters of the Adirondacks for nature and people. Nature.org/Adirondacks. The Chef Shop in Great Barrington, celebrating 25 years, offering tools and services for cooking enthusiasts, including Zwilling knives, Le Creuset cookware, cooking classes, and knife sharpening. TheChefShop.com. Gloriosa and Company, Ashfield, Massachusetts, new barn wedding venue and heated antique greenhouse offering tailored catering, garden to vase, flowers, and 4-bed and breakfast rooms, GloriosaCo.com. And Coldham and Hartman Architects, serving residential and institutional clients with architecture designed for resilience and renewability, designed for the next 100 years, CandHArchitects.com. Thanks again to John and Gabe for being here. Thanks to all of you for calling and for listening. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Your phones were answered by Barb King. Our producer, Jessica Blaustein-Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Have a great weekend. News is next.